Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Joining us now is Eric Schmidt, terrorism correspondent for the New York Times, and his story in the paper today is about the Pentagon's Northern Command. It was established after 9/11 to defend North American territory. And almost lost in the terror of 9/11 was the fact that apparently the airspace on the East Coast and the West Coast was relatively undefended, which was one of the reasons why planes were able to make it to Ground Zero and take down the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. And, of course, there was Flight 93, which crash-landed in Pennsylvania. Eric Schmidt, why is the Northern Command deciding to rethink a mission that it would seem to every American to be absolutely essential?
Well, with the it's actually the component of the U.S. Canadian command called NORAD, which carries out the air defense mission within the U.S. for NORTHCOM. They are basically looking over the progress that's been made in everything from hardening cockpit doors to improved intelligence to a better awareness of where the threat might be, to ask the question, do we really need to have this highest state of alert with the kind of resources they put against this, hundreds of fighter jets in the past and thousands of air crew members. This was gradually decreased immediately after 9/11 when there were 24/7 patrols over Washington and New York City. And the military had intermittent air patrols over American cities until about 2007. But now, with the two wars, obviously, in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and pressures on the aging fighter fleet, the military is now doing a review to see whether or not they might be able to reduce some of these commitments. Still maintain defense, but with a smaller number of forces.
Well, Eric Schmidt, President Bush said famously after 9/11 that we used to think the oceans protected American soil, not anymore. Is the Pentagon going back to the idea that that's the essential defense of airspace in North America, the fact that we're surrounded by two big oceans?
No, I don't think that's ever going to change, John. I think there's always a 9/11 fundamentally changed that view that the U.S. could still be a target. But I think what's happened in the intervening years is that the military has developed many other ways of detecting threats, both inside the United States and then threats that are coming from outside toward the United States. So this will still remain a piece of that, the air defenses, that is, but it's very expensive to operate, millions of dollars, if not hundreds of million dollars a year to operate. And so the question is, given perhaps the reduced threat in the growth of other areas that they compensate for the air defenses in protecting the country, can the military, you know, be able to do the same with fewer resources there?
You know, you and other commentators and writers about the military have often noted that generals love to fight the last war, which means they assess risks based on what they've already seen rather than what they're likely to see in the future. How much of this is an attempt to look forward and figure that the next attack is not going to be, civilian airliners aimed at towers?
That's right. That's a very important point. This assessment will actually look at the circumstances in which an attack would be aimed not at a public building or landmark, obviously, which were the 9/11 attacks, but whether terrorists could take a small civilian plane, for instance, and drive it and fly it into a power plant or a critical link in the nation's financial network, like a major electrical grid or a computer network hub. These are the kind of threats now that the military is trying to anticipate as they do this very comprehensive review that will be finished probably sometime next spring.
Now, the Government Accountability Office, in looking into this, suggests there's also a whole electronic dimension that you sort of alluded to it there, that attacks and the vulnerability of U.S. infrastructure electronically is maybe more where the action is for terrorists going forward.
That's right. The whole area of cyber warfare right now, both defensive and offensive, is one of the big growth areas in the military and intelligence community, and that is one of the major threats that the military sees and is going to be a part of this review. There's also much other broader. The military has created a new cyber command, for instance, that will be devoted looking to these very issues, and I think that illustrates the concern that the military and the government overall has toward this kind of threat.
You know, without getting into organizational charts, is this cyber command generally throughout the Pentagon, or is it under NORTHCOM, and is it going to be actually associated with Homeland Defense, or is it just something general?
It's going to be a command that will work with these other commands. It's going to have its own separate four-star commander, and it will be focused on this particular threat, but obviously it will have to work very closely with the military's geographic combatant commands, as well as a command here in the United States, like the Northern Command, that is responsible for supporting civilian agencies like the FBI in protecting the homeland.
Now, finally, if the General Accountability Office was as dubious as it sounds like it was in taking a look at NORTHCOM's both expenditures and its mission, how are American citizens to feel about this basic mission of defending U.S. territory? Are we safe enough, and are we still basically fighting the Cold War in the decisions to deploy air defenses around the United States?
Well, to the military's credit, the GAO, as you mentioned, it was quite critical in its report in January, saying that the Northern Command and the NORAD, in this case, had failed actually to conduct these kind of routine risk assessments that you're talking about. The military, and they held a hearing earlier this year and here in Washington, and there were severe critics of this. And so I think the military has somewhat been put on the spot, taken it to heart, and is now conducting this kind of review. I don't think we're seeing any kind of return of the Cold War. I think it is. There are always new challenges that the military is trying to sort out here, and where the threat will come from. As we've seen recently with some new domestic terrorism cases, that is, U.S. citizens or permanent residents training in camps in Pakistan, then coming back to the United States. And certainly the whole questions raised by the Fort Hood shooting have raised more questions about kind of the threat here within the homeland.
You know, the takeaway here for me is, you know, why, and I don't want to get you into a speculative realm in the last few seconds, but why is it that we seem to be clearer at the Pentagon about fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan than we are about defending territory here in the United States?
I think it's an open question right now, and one that's always difficult in balancing the protection of the country with the civil liberties and other things that go on here in the United States that are so important.
Eric Schmidt, terrorism correspondent for the New York Times, has a whole story about the review that the Pentagon is undertaking of the air defense deployment of U.S. territory and how the United States defends North America. Eric Schmidt, thanks so much.